We present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Welcome to the News Quiz. Here is a cutting spotted on the BBC's online listings, read by Rory Morrison.
1:30 p.m. ITV1. Julie Etchingham and Philip Schofield look back over the memorable events of the royal wedding day. Contains scenes which some viewers may find distressing.
And our thanks to Paul Byrne for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Richard Herring and Susan Kalman. Jeremy, which public enemy is no longer number one?
We're all supposed to be rejoicing in the death of Osama bin Laden, but every man's death diminishes me because I'm involved in mankind. And therefore, never send to ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. Pamers. Yeah, well, you wouldn't have wanted to be another world event on Monday, would you? Nothing else got to look at. It does make you wonder whether anything actually happened in the world on Monday other than that, which makes you think it would be far better had they done it on the Friday during the royal wedding. And then Hugh Edwards would have gone into meltdown. Breaking news, my arse, I've got serious grovelling to do. And they'd have had to go split screen, which would have really confused monarchists. And they'd have been sitting there thinking, oh, is that where they're going for their honeymoon? That looks horrible. I could do with a jolly good clean, that hotel room. Oh, that must be the uncle no one talks about.
I was a bit worried because last week when we were talking about Guantanamo, I said that I'd sold Andy Hamilton to America as bin Laden's mini-me. And I suddenly thought, because I haven't seen Andy for a while, I hope they got the right...
Cameron got right just before Obama went on television and said, really confused Americans, most of whom think that he is Osama bin Laden, and said, yeah, it was me, I did it, I killed him, I telepathically strangled him with my bare hands, it was me, can I be re-elected, please? And then before he did that, he rang at Cameron. Now, my girlfriend rang me at 9:30 in the morning, I was asleep at my friend's house in Cull Island in County Tyrone, and I was a bit irritable, I said, it's 9:30 in the morning. He rang Cameron about 2 o'clock in the morning. I'd have said, well, what do you want me to do about it? I mean, well, yeah, I suppose, all right, I'll do a press conference. And when I'm, okay. Well, yes, of course I'm going to congratulate you. What have you done with him? Well, what do you do that for? You're buried at sea. You can't bury people in water. You fed him to the fish. At least be honest about what you've done with it. And so they chucked him to the fish. And then all this fantasy started about what had happened and all the papers ran with it, which was marvellous, because the first story was he was opening up with an AK-47 while throwing wives at the soldiers, standing on a mound of kittens. And then gradually it turned out that he was just stood there and they whacked him.
It was odd that Obama said that you won't see Osama bin Laden walking this earth again. Which seemed like an odd way of putting someone who was dead. I think they might just put wheels on him or something, or they sent him to Mars. It's just like an odd way of phrasing it, as if I'm telling the truth, but I'm hiding a bigger lie.
You could have said something a bit more exciting, like, yeah, forget about it. Bada bing, bada boom, it's over. He's close with the fishes. Forget about it.
I was surprised he was alive. That was a thing for me. I thought he was dead ages ago. So I think they should have, on Sunday, they should have said, oh, by the way, Osama bin Laden's still alive, and I could have got used to that. And then I wouldn't have been such a surprise when I found out he was alive and now was dead.
Was it because he didn't turn up for the royal wedding? Is that what
a spent force in the world anyway. I mean, Al-Qaeda's popularity is sinking. They've completely missed the boat with the Arab Spring. No one really likes them. I mean, whacking him now, it's a bit like doorstepping the tremolos and saying, you're not very popular anymore. You're a bit rubbish, you are.
It's embarrassing, though. Do you not think it's embarrassing that he lived in all that suburban comfort for all
that? It wasn't
that
nice.
But apparently, in 2009, he did Pakistan's version of Come Dine With Me. I think it's been...
What was quite impressive was the fact that he was killed by this crack group of six Navy SEALs. Now, I thought they could just balance balls on their noses. Yeah. That's deeply impressive.
No, they're not actually SEALs.
Oh, they're
actually
not.
Sea lions. It's a popular misconception. It would be brilliant, though, wouldn't it? It'd be brilliant. You're the most wanted man in the world, and your bedroom door swings open.
You'd give yourself up to... If a SEAL trained itself to open a door, I'd give myself up to them.
The killing of Osama bin Laden has been called a 10-year wait that was over in 40 minutes. Ooh, sounds like an NHS appointment. The death of the world's most wanted man was front-page news around the world. The New York Times advised him to rot in hell. The Telegraph mocked him for hiding behind his wife, while the Express asked how bin Laden's death would affect house prices. 2 points to Mr. Hardy. Rebecca, who's flicked AV sign at their partners?
There's been this referendum. And, of course, we all know the results of that referendum because we're not recording this programme in advance of those results coming through. So I'll now give you those results.
Even though we recorded on a Thursday, I don't think you need to be Mystic Meg to guess that Nick Clegg is not going to be smiling tomorrow. Do you think?
It's a fair bet that the No campaign has triumphed, which I can now tell you after the event. I'm actually very relieved about, because having read the No literature, I'm now fully convinced that this system, the AV system, was so complicated, it was so dangerously complicated, that people's brains, quite literally, I'm serious about this, would have exploded in the polling room. It was more complicated than astrophysics.
Yeah.
It was more complicated than the mystery of how Donald Trump's hair stays at that angle. It was not for the likes of you and me, Sandy, this system. So I'm glad that it's lost. If it hasn't, could we just sort of cut all that bit?
No, I thought that was good. I wonder if we should just record a single line in case the Yes campaign won. So, well, good Lord, there's a surprise.
There wasn't any chance. It was a first-past-the-post thing, wasn't it? There wasn't any chance to sort of have a preference, to sort of choose. Because you could have had three things, like one... Yes to AV, two, no to AV, three, I've just lost the will to live.
But even the Yes campaign seemed to sort of struggle a bit, didn't they? Because really the thing that they kept saying was, we'll vote for this system, we don't really want it, but it's probably a bit better than the last one. It's like Martin Luther King saying, brothers and sisters, we will get to the promised land, it won't quite be the one we were hoping for.
Do you know what, Sandy? If you're going to do comedy impersonations, yeah. I wouldn't start with African-American icons of the 20th century. I'd maybe start with Norman
Wisdom. I thought
Wisdom.
It was like he was in the room.
Slightly more Colonel Sanders.
Well, the notion of me being finger-licking good is not the first time.
But the Yes campaign was rubbish, because they kept saying things like, we'll make MPs work hard, and you think, well, I doubt that. You'd have to close all the bars to do that. And then they said... And MPs will have to work harder to appeal to everyone. And you think, well, that just means that MPs are just going to have no opinions whatsoever and say, I'm in favour of open borders and I hate the polls.
They accused the No campaign of negative campaigning, which was surely the point.
I did like the attack dog, Chris Huhne, being released in cabinet, apparently. Clearly, he's sort of positioning himself.
In case Nick Clegg was to get wobbly.
I don't know how that would happen.
No.
It's not going to happen.
No,
but in case it did. But it's just, you know, trying to position yourself as the toughest Lib Dem is kind of scraping the barrel, really.
Susan, of course, we're forgetting the most important elections of all of this week, the Scottish elections. I don't know what it's like up there, but down here we're gripped.
It's going fine, because of course we have got proportional representation in Scotland, and surprisingly we managed to understand it quite well.
You're much cleverer than
you. Yes, I know, it's just we're given fuzzy felt and we have a picture of a castle. Do you know, this is off topic, but I'm going to tell you this. I was staying in a hotel across the road.
Ooh, puff.
And the woman at the desk said, can you fill in the form and can we have your passport? And I said, I'm from Scotland. And she went, yes. And I was like, it's not got to that stage yet.
There were elections across the UK this week, but the biggest talking point is the growing tensions between the Tories and the Lib Dems created by the AV referendum. And the most convincing threat wheeled out by the No campaign was that AV will lead to us having a weak coalition government that no one really wants. Can you imagine such a thing? So, 2 points to Rebecca. Richard, listen to this. I'm all lost in the supermarket. I can no longer shop happily. I came in here for a special advert. Richard, who is leading the opposition to the idea that every little helps?
Oh, I think this is a reference to the protests about the supermarkets coming. There's one in Bristol, I think, that the Bristol people have thrown things at and
but
scratched out Tesco's.
Somebody in particular who's leading...
I think David Miliband is leading something for once.
I love that you think it's David, because he's not in charge.
Oh,
but
the other one.
I don't know what Ed would think.
Oh, Ed Miliband, that's the one. Ed Miliband, the leader of the Labour Party, I understand, is going against the Tesco's locals and the Tesco's Express and the Sainsbury's locals. Because everyone obviously would prefer to have local corner shops and butchers. We all prefer those, but we all then go and shop in Tesco's and Sainsbury's.
It was extraordinary, the sort of rioting, wasn't it? It was nice to see a community joining together like that.
It's just Bristol. I think they might have just seen those mechanised tills and thought they were some kind of demon magic in there that you could be... by
ironic,
a personless till. It magically knows how much my food costs.
We've had a riot in Fortnum & Mason's, we've had a riot in Tesco's, we just need one in Lidl. We'll have a fully classless society.
I caused a bit of a stramash in a supermarket.
You caused a...
A stramash.
Excellent.
Is that not a
stramash?
A stramash.
Uh-huh. Keep saying stramash to define stramash.
It's not good, essentially.
No. Brouhaha.
A brouhaha, exactly. It was a brouhaha for Radio 4.
Well done you for being ethnic.
Yes, isn't that lovely?
And may I say from all of us, welcome to our country.
Ed Miliband has spoken up against the Tescoisation of Britain, saying people should have more say over what happens on their high street. David Cameron has previously warned of Tescoisation, but has been quiet about it since coming into power, as George Osborne hopes to build up enough club card points to pay off the deficit. Mr. Miliband's comments about Tescoisation came shortly after riots in Bristol, which centred on a newly opened Tesco Express in the area of Stokes Croft. A spokesman said that 160 officers were called to deal with 300 people, but despite the crowds, Tesco refused to open another checkout.
They should really have let people arrest themselves, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
Unexpected violence in the bagging area.
The scores are Jeremy and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Richard and Susan. We start round two with an advert from the Metro Jobs page.
Social worker wanted to join a new team in East London. The role requires at least 3 years' experience as a qualified youth offender.
Our thanks to Joe Green for sending us that. Rebecca, who thinks Europe could benefit from being simply super?
Oh, I think he's a Lib Dem MP called Andrew Duff, which
he's
means...
He's an MEP.
Right, yeah. OK. So this means that the following idea can quite justifiably be referred to as a Duff proposal, which is to have 25 super MEPs. So if, like me, you like Europe, you like MEPs, you think they're great, but you don't think they're quite Europe-y enough... Then you can have these super MPs whose job, as far as I could see, is to sort of add a sense of cohesion to the whole of Europe, because these MEPs from different countries, they will insist on representing their national interests.
But they're hoping that they're going to be celebrities.
Yes, they were hoping for that. But you see, the trouble is apparently they have to attend lots of functions. So they're going to get the sort of celebrities who are willing to go out of the country for long periods of time and eat whatever is put in front of them. It's basically going to be I'm a celebrity in Brussels. It's going to be dismal.
Like Eurovision, where one of them is mysteriously from Israel and no one can quite explain why.
If I think of Europe, I don't think of a particular person. That's the thing. You don't think of who
that's
is Europe.
That's the problem, you see.
Who is
that's
Europe?
The problem.
You need a super MEP. You need Nigel Farage in a leotard. You need...
Why don't we put the MEPs all in a kind of radioactive chamber and see what superpowers they develop? It might be more exciting. Invisibility they've pretty much all got at the moment, I think, as it is. I know in some way everyone's trying to make everything the same and homogenised now, so every high street's got to be the same and every country in Europe's got to be the same. It's kind of good that we're different, isn't it?
I think it would be good if we were all the same, because I don't understand other languages. When I went to...
OK, everybody really concentrate.
When
yes,
I went
Susan?
To... I went to Berlin recently, and I don't speak any German. My better half speaks fluent German, and I was getting, quite frankly, very distressed by not understanding anything that was happening. Three things I know. Ich heiße Susan, ich bin 13 Jahre alt. That's 13, that's when I learnt it. Ich wohne in Glasgow, that's all I know. Now, that doesn't help you as a 36-year-old wanting beer and fags in Germany. So I just started making up words. I made up the word Appelpumpfen. And started asking for Appelpumpfen in shops, and they would look at me puzzled and I'd go, yeah, now you know how it feels.
They should learn to speak something else, because the trouble is with German, it just sounds sinister, doesn't it? The most, you know, it could be the word that means beautiful, fragrant flower, and it just sounds like Achtung, die prisoners are escaping, doesn't it?
Jeremy, one of the reasons why I like my better half is that she does speak German, because I think German is actually one of the sexiest languages in the world. Mm-hmm. Because you can be told, go and get a cup of tea, and you go, do you know what I mean? It's like, or tell me again.
Some of us were killed in two world wars so that you can sit here and say that. And to say nothing of what the Japanese did to Doctor Who's assistant on Tenko.
Tenko?
Some of us don't forget, Kalman. Sitting there in your lederhosen.
A proposal put forward by Liberal Democrat MEP Andrew Duff would see 25 new super MEPs added to the European Parliament at a cost of £50 million a year. It is hoped that many of the new super MEPs will be well-known celebrities, although that would put Belgium out of the picture. I was thinking of standing myself, but I think I'm ineligible because I have a life. 2 points to Rebecca. Susan, listen to this.
I'm just a girl who can't say no. I'm in a terrible fix. I always say, come on, let's go, just when I'll say nix.
Susan, who'd like to give girls a lesson in how to say no?
This was my favourite story of the week. Nadine Dorries. She has come up with... It's just brilliant. And I don't know why someone's not thought of this before. She's put forward a bill in Parliament to require schools to add an extra module to sex education, where girls between the ages of 13 and 16 are told the remarkable news that they can say no. Boys don't need to be taught about anything.
No, it's just girls. It's just...
The girls need to be told they can say no, because fundamentally it is the girls' fault for getting pregnant.
I don't know that you need lessons. I've never had any trouble saying no to boys. I find it really...
Oh, my dear, you just haven't met the right chap. Yeah. I could change you.
My children are older than yours, Rebecca. Do you know what's the best way to put teenagers off sex? Discuss it with them in a frank, open and honest way.
The amount of sex education I think there is at schools is quite minimal. I mean, there's all these stories about how they're teaching seven-year-olds to put on condoms on cucumbers. I don't know where that happens. That doesn't happen.
That's going to give them unrealistic expectations.
It is, yes.
Well, it's also going to stop the production of baby cucumbers.
I don't like all this free and frank discussion nonsense. I think that's absolutely wrong. We should all grow up not knowing what's happening, so it's a nice surprise the first time. Fundamentally, the point of this, the annoying thing of this is that it completely ignores anything to do with the boys and responsibility. I got really angry at that woman because I think it's just morally wrong. It's repugnant to say that it's only girls who are responsible for what's happening. And I think the 60-odd... Thank you. The 60-odd MPs that voted in favour of that bill should have a look at themselves. It's disgusting.
Well, boys will just use the only strategy of the AV Yes campaign, which is to say, yeah, I know you don't want to, but say yes just to annoy the Tories.
I think maybe the answer is just women should say no for their whole lives. Let's see how that goes for people then, shall we?
It's worked out for me in that way.
There are benefits to abstinence. Not shaving your legs.
Can I just point you in the direction of marriage as well? It works the same way.
Not shaving your legs, thing.
Yeah, it's really nice when you see your partner shaving their legs and you're saying, oh, you're doing that? She says, yeah, I'm going out. Okay.
Tory MP Nadine Dorries this week managed to pass a 10-minute rule bill that could lead to legislation requiring the teaching of abstinence to girls to be included in sex education. Critics of the motion claim that Dorries' proposal reinforces gender stereotypes such as men being sexually unaccountable and women making terrible MPs. 2. The scores are Jeremy and Rebecca have got 8 points, but so too have Richard and Susan. Yeah. Before we start round 3, here is an advert from Military Fitness magazine.
Outdoor survival course. Not for the faint-hearted. Come and find out what it really takes to survive in the wild. Bring a packed lunch and a drink.
And our thanks to James Dalton for sending that in. Rebecca, why might we soon enjoy a glass of Buckhouse fizz?
We now know officially that there is a recession on because the Queen is making her own wine.
Yeah.
So there are going to be demijohns in the downstairs loo, just like there were when I was growing up. It'll be sort of wine made out of potato peelings, presumably, because that's what we're doing now. We're digging for victory. Yeah. No, apparently she's planting vines because she's got a bit of... I don't think she is. Let's be honest. I think she's getting some gardeners to
hopefully.
Do it.
Oh!
But they are planting some vines.
If she's not getting in one of those buckets and treading on the grapes herself, I'm not buying it. That's what I'm saying. This is like a Del Boy scam. They got loads of wine left over from the wedding last week and she's selling it.
And relabeling
it. Yeah, we just made this relabel it. Put my face on it.
Do you think there'll be royal wine accessories? Is it corkscrew shaped like Princess Eugenie's hat? Or champagne flute pressed out of Pippa Middleton's bottom or something?
That's
most talked about royal arse since Prince Andrew.
Selfish though, wine. Selfish. I hate wine.
And you hate wine?
I hate wine. I can't drink wine. It sends me loopy. It sends me absolutely
no.
loopy.
Do you know what you do? You put Alka-Seltzer and Liebfraumilch and you just tackle the hangover with a preemptive strike. It's amazing.
I hate wine and I want them to make something that I like.
Buckfast?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chips.
Chips. The royal family is to produce a sparkling wine from vines grown in Windsor Great Park. English wine was served at the royal wedding, with foreign guests wondering why the vinegar came in such large bottles. 2 points to Rebecca.
You know, Osama bin Laden died this week. Why are we doing these stories? Osama bin Laden died!
Exactly. Poor did he.
Yeah. Richard,
yes.
Why are people in some quarters feeling depressed?
This is a ridiculous story where the midlife crisis has now divided into fours. It used to be halfway through the life, and now it's in quarters, so you can get four. I suppose you get one just as you're dying. Going, oh, this is quite a crisis. People are having midlife crisis at 25 or something.
Well, and, 25 to 35 is apparently a quarter-life crisis. Yeah. 35? You would be depressed if you're going to live to be 140.
You can't work out the percentage until you're dead, though, no. Really. They should wait until the end, and then you can work out what it was, because you might be 25 and die at 30, and it turns out you're, 5'6".
That's true. They didn't call the 100 Years War at the start,
not at the very
they?
Beginning, no.
They said a skirmish which will doubtless be over by Christmas.
You've got children, Rebecca. They're not entitled to a crisis, are they, of any kind?
They're not entitled to anything,
no.
Really. It's fundamentally all mine.
But I think nobody should be depressed if their knees are working.
They're all mired in debt, aren't they? What future they've got? There's climate change, the welfare state's being demolished, the health service is being destroyed by Andrew Lansley. What hope is there for 25-year-olds? Sorry to bum out the younger listeners, but we can safely say that nobody under 60 listens to the programme. They raise their hands, the teenagers in the audience, showing surprising will to live. There was one on the end who was going to raise her hand, and she thought, yeah, but what's the point? It's not going to... difference. They're not going to listen to me if I raise my hand.
Well, apparently a quarter-life crisis arrives when somebody realises that the real world is tougher, more competitive and less forgiving than they had imagined. I have, frankly, protected my children against this by acting like a complete and utter bastard all their lives.
What do you do if you have a quarter-life? What's the sort of retail therapy equivalent? Because, you know, men buy a fast car and start wearing Converse at the age of 55 and things like that. But sorry, Rory. But if you're 25, do you suddenly start crawling on all fours and breastfeeding and things like that? I'm just asking. I'm not justifying it. I'm just asking a question.
You spend too long on your own.
Perhaps it was a rhetorical question. But then what's the point in a rhetorical question?
People between the ages of 25 and 35 are as vulnerable to a quarter-life crisis as those in their 40s are to a midlife crisis. Dr. Oliver Robson conducted a 5-year study, although admitted to a mid-study crisis during year 3, in which he started eyeing up other studies. and invested a lot of money in a flashy new pen. Most people emerge from a quarter-life crisis feeling much more positive and in control of their life, as opposed to a midlife crisis where you emerge in debt and married to a cheeky girl. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along, Mr. Hardy.
This was sent in by M. Norwood from Sidcup. It comes from this night's highlights for Lates at the Science Museum. Brass rubbings of centenary icons. Rub yourself silly with complete strangers on the floor of our most iconic gallery.
Ms. Front.
Yes, this one was sent in by David Armstrong from Belfast, and it's an internet ad for a pony. And it says, Ballard Ar Eoghan, top notch, is a 10-year-old gelding. He is a Grade A registered show jumper who was recently acquired by his current rider. An extremely honest and experienced pony, he will take any capable young rider to a very high level. The pony is being sold reluctantly as the rider is an unappreciative, spoilt brat.
Mr. Herring.
This is from Eric Burgess in Kiev. In the Ukraine. Ooh. He's taken from the Eastern Daily Press. It's almost funny, right? It's about possible alien sightings over Norfolk and Suffolk. In October 1988, a man told the MOD he feared he'd been beamed up into a large cigar-shaped object which flew over his home. The man claimed he may have been abducted after he mysteriously gained an hour of time, but MOD investigators pointed out the clocks had gone back the night before.
Ms. Gallman.
This is from Graham McLaughlin from the Edinburgh Evening News, and it's a case report of a case that was in course, and the headline is, Man Cleared of Weighing Penis on Fruit and Veg Scales. And so it's a report of the case, and it says, later, when asked by Fiscal Deputy James O'Reilly if she could have been mistaken about seeing a penis, she said, I could have been, although there was something there. It could have been a hand. Maybe it was.
Take a look at the final score. Richard and Susan have got 12 points, but this week's winners on charm alone with 13 points is Jeremy and Rebecca. Before we leave you, here is a headline from The Times sent in by Martin Tregongling.
Nudists seek young blood to revive sagging membership.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Rebecca Front, Richard Herring and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Sandy Toxvig, and the news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Gareth Gwynne, James Kettle and Roderick Crooks, with additional material by Andrea Mann, Benjamin Partridge and Andy Walton. The producer was Sam Bryant.